Hi all. You have my sincere apologies for having to deliver the in-person lecture as well as the online lecture in this way. I'm late to the COVID party. I just turned out my head cold was COVID. So until I'm cleared, I guess I'll be delivering the lecture in this format. This is the way we did it for the entire, whether it was a year and a half we were on. COVID restrictions, right? We weren't in the classroom. What I'm going to do today is to provide you with a combination of today, me talking to you from my home office here, interspersed with some pre-recorded lecture of me in the classroom covering the appropriate material. And then, where it's appropriate, I will cut back in with updated content and material to keep us current with the lecture notes and the current material. So again, I apologize, and I guess we'll be doing it this way until I'm cleared to be back on campus. Okay, so welcome to lecture 15 of Marketing 25010, Principles of Marketing COVID Edition. That's March 6th, 2023. Lecture notes page is 133. By the way, if you're following sports at all, like for example, the Golden Flashes sports, good luck to the Golden Flashes, who are going to be playing in the MAC tournament. The women's team will play on Wednesday, March 8th in game two. We're number four, KSU, against number five, Northern Illinois. Go Flashes. Likewise, the men's team will play on Thursday, March 9th in game three of that evening, Kent State versus Northern Illinois. Go Flashes. We'll hope that all that goes very well for the Flashes. I mentioned last week that we will be hearing about Research Extra Credit number one. You should be seeing email later today, if it isn't already there, I guess, about Research Extra Credit number one. There'll be information also in the extra credit folder on the class website, that module. What you'll do is you'll read the information, you'll follow the link, you'll complete the survey by its deadline, which should be, I think, a week from today, if I recall. But that information will be provided. And doing that successfully and paying attention, you don't get credit if you're not paying attention. It'll add another 0.5% to your final course grade. Hey, these things add up. So in terms of mini tests, we know that mini test 7 will close tonight on its regular schedule. And then mini test 8 will open at the end of the week, covering this lecture and the one on the 6th. Lecture 16 as well. Enhanced Learning Extra Credit, number 4, closed last week. We bumped up our average score, yay! And now that's 0.28. So overall, on average, you've added 1% to your final course grade. So if you're right at that margin at the end, you're going to appreciate that. And Enhanced Learning Extra Credit and PACBACK, number 5, are open now. They close on the originals. They'll close on their regular schedule this Thursday. Business in the news. I don't know if you follow the story or not. Do you know anyone who has to use insulin, who's diabetic? A fair number of people do need that, and it can be quite costly. So Eli Lilly is going to cut their prices of their insulin drugs by 70%, and they're going to cap patient costs at 35%. Quite helpful for many of their consumers. Eli Lilly, facing pressure to curb diabetes treatment costs, will cut the list prices for its most commonly prescribed insulin products by 70% and take other steps to make it easier for patients to afford these drugs. So we're seeing a bit of price in the marketing mix. I do remind you, by the way, these drug companies are not nonprofit, they're for-profit companies. Insulin maker Lilly, Novo Nordisk, and Sanofi substantially raised the prices for their products during the 2010s so that many people can have trouble affording the products, which can cost hundreds of dollars a month. To ease the burden, some U.S. states, see California for example, have enacted insulin cost caps in recent years. So we're seeing this price in an oligopoly market. For these drugs, there's only a few large companies, by and large, that are competing, and they get to push the price around among themselves. But we're also seeing in this particular instance a bit of political, legal, regulatory, one of the crust factors, influence finally pushing back on these costs. Lilly said the 70% price cuts would take effect in the fourth quarter for Humalog and Humulin, its two biggest selling insulin products, and it plans to improve a program that caps patients' out-of-pocket expense at $35 a month. So again, price in the marketing mix. While the cuts may not affect every patient immediately, many patients with insurance already pay fixed monthly copays. The American Diabetes Association praised Lilly for its moves and said it encouraged other insulin manufacturers to follow suit. So again, competition in the marketplace, encouraging others to follow suit. In addition to reducing the list prices for its top-selling insulins, Lilly said it would introduce on April 1st a new insulin named Resvoglar. It's a copycat version of the competition's insulin, Sanofi's Lantus insulin, which they're allowed to do. It's a generic version. Lilly will list its price at $92 for a five-pack of injection pens, a 78% discount to the list price for Lantus. So again, price competition in the marketplace, a bit of maybe forced social responsibility. Lilly's been planning these moves for a while. Lilly incorporated the effect on insulin sales into its prior forecast for 2023 sales and earnings. The company, which also makes non-insulin diabetes drugs and cancer treatments, expects 2023 sales of up to $30.8 billion, about 8% higher than 2022. So this is part of their corporate growth strategy. Yeah? So we'll see what happens and see what happens as others perhaps follow this example. And again, you may also know that President Biden has some legislation working on this as well. In terms of marketing the news, how about something from our friendly store, Lowe's? Lowe's has a new marketing approach that's going to lean into their color for their workers' vests, their color for the logo, Lowe's Red. So Lowe's is turning red as it strives to give customers a reason to shop its brand amid an overall slowing in retail. The home improvement retailer is highlighting its red-vested employees as the experts shoppers need. The new brand platform, Lowe's Knows, and the color red will permeate all of the chain's marketing moving forward, including digital assets and signage. So what are they doing? Well, in part, this is a reaction to changing in sales, slowing retail sales, due in part, of course, to inflationary pressures and consumer expectations. And they are using this opportunity to create an integrated marketing communication, a promotional part of the mix. We did some research and we found that the Red Vest Associate is the heartbeat of our brand. So Jennifer Wilson, Senior VP Enterprise Brand and Marketing, the idea of Lowe's Knows was to be this empathetic, helpful partner to our customers. So there's the importance of marketing research to understand how to reach those customers, understanding the consumer, providing customer value, which of our attributes and elements do they really want and value, and positioning the brand. The campaign includes broadcast TV, streaming, digital video, and paid social. So here's the media strategy to reach the consumer. What we're trying to do is create a strategic thread that helps us because of its more distinctive brand awareness. So this brand image being built to position the brand in the minds of the consumer. The new campaign includes a 30-second ad. Let's take a look at that.
Lowe's knows it's not just what we've got, it's who we've got. That's why we got nearly 300,000 associates that got your back. Sure, Lowe's knows the tools, materials, and tech to tackle it all. But Lowe's knows you also need the how-to crew. And the partners pros count on. Lowe's knows no matter what you're taking on, it's always easier when you got the right people, the right products, all at the right place. You got this, and we got you.
So it's obviously the ad that we just saw. And the spot will run throughout the year. It'll run in Spanish as well. So one of our target markets, the Hispanic market, and we have an ad for them. In addition, Lowe's will air two commercials focused on do-it-yourself consumers, a particular target audience, and two spots focused on professional customers in the first quarter of this year. So we're reaching both the B2C segments and B2B consumers with our new marketing campaign. And so we see a bit of target market at work. Okay. and that's out of that age. All right, so we're going to pick up with, to begin with, a pre-recording. Lecture notes, page 133 and page 252, continuing chapter 9, segmentation, targeting, positioning, and as appropriate, I'll be interrupting the flow with some newly recorded stuff and perhaps back to pre-recorded lecture as well. And we'll see how this goes for us. Again, I'm sorry we're in this format. Bear with me a second and we'll be into the lecture. So not all niche marketing approaches work out for you. All your eggs in one basket. When things don't work out, you're gone. So you might say, well, I understand that. Maybe what I want to do is hit a couple segments up. So this is the idea of a multiple segment strategy. So again, we've done the work, we've done the segmentation work, we've looked out to our various potential populations, we've broken them up into different groups, and we say, wait a minute, we can do two or three or more of those segments. So we're going to identify multiple segments, we're going to develop, market, and manage multiple marketing mix offerings, and we're going to attempt to satisfy the needs, wants, and desires of each segment. We're trying to satisfy everybody with our marketing mix. This segment with our marketing mix. This segment with our marketing mix. This segment with our marketing mix. So we're using a targeted marketing mix approach to each one of these segments. For example, Bayer, aspirin, and more. I assume you've heard of Bayer. But Bayer markets Aleve and Bronchiate and Camphophonique and Citrucol and Dombrovoro and Fermerol and Flintstone and Vanquish and Bayer and Vactine and Midol. Different segments. They have multiple segments that they're focusing on. What are some advantages of this? Well, you can avoid seasonal demand. If you have both skis and tennis rackets, you can have one up, the other down. Dorm rooms, when don't we have a lot of demand for dorm rooms? Summer, okay? Anybody know what we do in the summer to make up for that loss of income with the dorm rooms? We have all kinds of camps, band camp, cheer camp, okay? So we sell these out to groups that want to do things in the summer. You also then become very well known in the product category as a leader, because wherever you go, there you are. Wherever the consumers go, there you are. On the other hand, imagine the inventory carrying costs Bayer must have for all the products we just saw, right? Or Wilson, imagine what their warehouses must look like. So you've got to have adequate inventories of each item, each color, each style, each shape, each size. Holy moly's. Got a lot of money tied up there. Then each segment, because they're different from one another, needs a separate promotional appeal. That gets expensive. You don't get a lot of economies of scale there. You're going to have higher distribution costs if each segment shops in a different place for those items that we're talking about. So you had better have pretty strong sales when you roll out a new product to a new segment. For example, it's estimated that each new version of Crest that they roll out needs about $100 million in sales, annual sales, to support it. I've never done the arithmetic, but that's a lot of tubes of toothpaste that you have to sell. So remember we talked about part of the segmentation strategy was, do you have enough potential demand? Numbers of people, dollars coming in to make this thing work? Because you're about to sink a boatload of money in this new product for this new segment. Urban Outfitters, we know Urban Outfitters, right? Yeah. Is a company that has a multiple segment strategy. So Urban Outfitters is a lifestyle retail company, operates in retail clothing stores. It operates through two reportable business segments, retail and wholesale. The retail segment consists of Urban Outfitters. How do you say that next word? Anthropology, Free People, Terrain, Leafs Doter, and Beholden Brands. Beholden Brands, I guess. Whose merchandise is sold directly through stores, catalogs, call centers, and websites. The wholesale segment consists of
the Free People division. So we have two broad segments and then sub-segments within the consumer side. It designs, develops, and markets young women's contemporary casual apparel. So Urban Outfitters targets young adults, men and women, aged 18 to 28 through a unique merchandising mix, compelling store environment, websites, and mobile applications. Anthropology Group consists of Anthropology, Beholden, and Terrain. Anthropology's target market is women between the ages of 30 to 40, who are both affluent and individuals who want to reflect their unique style with what they wear. The brand goes beyond the surface and considers their target customer a friend. Anybody ever shop in such a store? Yeah? Do you feel that they treat you as though they're your friend or not really? Any more than anywhere else? Not really? Not really. All right. The Beholden brand emphasizes every element that contributes to a wedding. The brand offers a curated collection of heirloom quality wedding gowns, bridesmaid frocks, party dresses, assorted jewelry, headpieces, footwear, lingerie, and decorations, a different segment than the other two. Terrain is designed to appeal to women and men interested in a creative and sophisticated outdoor living and gardening experience, obviously different than the clothing lines. Terrain's product offerings include lifestyle home, garden, and outdoor living products, antiques, live plants, flowers, wellness products, and accessories. And Leaf Store at Anthropology, artistic, timeless, and collectible. The Leaf Store line is eminently wearable, although not pronounceable, bringing a modern dressmaker's sensibility to life through fine fabrics and tailoring, ornamented with extraordinary details such as unique trims, vintage buttons, and beautiful linings. Whew. Then, Free People. Free People is targeted at young contemporary women aged 25 to 30. A specialty women's clothing brand is the destination for bohemian fashion that features the latest trends and vintage collections for women who live free through fashion, art, music, and travel. There we are, being bohemian and living free. So it's a particular taste, a particular lifestyle, a particular market segment for this group. So they cover a lot of these different issues and more. Nuuly is their subscription segment, consisting of the Nuuly brand, which is a monthly women's apparel subscription rental service that launched in 2019. For a monthly fee, Nuuly subscribers can select rental products. It must be products. From a wide selection of the company's own brands, third-party labels, and one-of-a-kind vintage pieces through custom-built digital platform, subscribers select their products each month, wear them as often as they like, then swap into new products the following month. Subscribers are also able to purchase the rented product. Anybody doing a subscription-based fashion approach to life? Anybody know anybody else who is? Okay, not our segment. And then Menus and Venues. This division focuses on a dining experience that provides excellence in food, beverage, and service with 11 restaurants in the U.S. Quite a different segment from the other ones we've been talking about. And imagine what it means to say, okay, go manage that, that being all of it, not a thing. You have different resources, different management expertise, different groups of people coming in, much more complex to manage this sort of thing. Levi's also runs segments for its jean products, focusing on Levi jeans here. Is that already in your notes? I always ask these questions and you don't have the answer. So when we think at the broadest level, what would you say the broadest level for Levi's segments would be? Any answer will do, but what do you think the broadest level is for Levi's jeans? I'll accept any answer. Blue jean, you're right there. I mean, within the blue jean category, because of course they also do jackets, they also do other things, but within the blue jeans category, what would you say the broadest segment might be, segmentation might be? Yeah. Exactly right. Have you been in my class before? All right, see, he's been in my class and psychically got the right answer. At the broadest level, you have gender differences. You have jeans for men versus jeans for women, right? But we would say that's too broad, because within those, you have different needs, wants, desires, and tastes that consumers have. And those are, for men, we can by fit, loose, regular, slim, by leg, boot cut, skinny, straight, tapered. So you can buy Levi's mostly online these days, but they're still out there, from Sears. What do you pay for Levi's jeans, do you imagine? How much are they? $60? Does that sound right? $60 for Levi's jeans? Yeah, yeah. Because I haven't looked since inflation. But let's see if Sears is still there for me. And let's see what it costs for a pair of, that's Robux. How about our friends? So apparently you can buy jeans for $19 if you want. How about by brand? How about giving me Levi's? Let's see what we come up with here. Woo! So there's a nice orange pair of Levi's jeans for $52.59. Okay, you're right on target. $60, right? So here we have Levi's jeans out there in various cuts for around $60. Kohl's, again, I've mentioned occasionally that they're one of my favorite places to shop, unless they don't give me what I want here with our friends Levi's. All right, so we're focused on men at the moment, so let's see what their Levi's men's look like and sell for. So Levi's, a little more expensive, $69.69. Looks like it's about a bit more expensive there. And Nordstrom, how do Nordstrom jeans sell for? Can we find Nordstrom Levi's jeans? These are women, which makes a little difference. So 50, 50, 50, can we get men? Let's go with gender. Can we find men's Levi's? Just curious how they sell. 70, 90, whoops, Nordstrom's. 50, 98, I don't think I saw that over at Kohl's. So we have some of the low-end stuff, and then we have our more normal price, which is a little more expensive, up to $100. How many people paying $100 for their jeans-ish? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. All right, and then, of course, we can look over on the women's side. Women by waist, at the waist, high rise, just below the waist, low rise, ultra low rise, skinny cut, leg cut, boot cut, flare, trouser. And then we have other brands, of course, that compete. So in different segments, we can buy some Armani jeans. What do those go for? Here's a regular fit, five pocket trousers in cashmere and cotton denim for a mere $975. I don't show my wife this site much because, or how about a nice regular five pocket trousers in cotton and wool for, you know, $2,600. Well, I exaggerate. It's only $25.95. For an essence, a pair of jeans. Targeting a different segment of the population, right? So, True Religion, Neiman Marcus, and a question, how can jeans cost $300? Well, how can they cost, whatever I just said, $1,200? So there are certainly different segments out there for blue jeans. On the other hand, there's mass customization for jeans. You can make your own jeans customized to your particular size. So you also can make custom suits, etc. But here we go, customize them to your size. You can choose all of the different things and get it in a mass customization sense. Or here's salvage jeans. They also will customize your jeans for you with fine craftsmanship and a good selection of thread color, buttons, your initials in laser, etc. And here's a very nice pair for 8200 B. I don't know what B is. So if you want to customize your jeans, that's a different way to approach a segment, mass customization for jeans.
We've segmented markets in a lot of different ways. The way that we're focused on primarily today is by, I'll call it industry. And so our whole business is focused on, as an example, primary metals, wind energy, power generation, cement, automotive, off-highway construction vehicles. And so we kind of divide the market up by how our product gets used and in the kinds of equipment and applications our product gets used. And within those market segments, then, we've you know, we can divide up the market even further, and that's the real challenge of marketing, is this micro marketing or micro segmentation to really understand within off-highway construction, as an example, are there customers that demand short lead time production? Are there customers that need longer life? Are there customers that are looking for more productivity? And again, going down to that level and trying to develop products and service offerings around that is a real challenge. It's actually been a very big focus of the Timken Company since about 2004. We've had a strong focus on strengthening our marketing capabilities in those areas I just talked about.
And so sometimes it seems simple. You would say, well, hey, in this industry, everybody must know these are segments. Well, yeah, sure, you do, but so does everybody else. That's not where the finesse comes at. Given what you do, who you are, your skill, your expertise, your competencies, what are the micro segments within here? People that want either a short lead time or a longer life. What are those people's pain points that you can do across the broader categories to have a unique selling proposition against competition for that segment? So it's not just, oh, those are the categories. It's a little more finesse, a little more work than that. So that's segmentation of the B2C.
We've segmented.
Going back to the B2C world, I mentioned Bayer before. So Bayer employs 22,000 people worldwide. They're active in more than 100 countries, so it's global marketing. They have sales of over 4 billion euro, whatever year I put that together. More than 170 brands worldwide. Consumer Health headquarters is in Whippany, New Jersey. And Bayer Consumer Health's over-the-counter brands are manufactured around the globe in Europe, North America, and Latin America, as well as Asia. So again, a global company doing, of course, segmentation. If you look at the consumer care strategic unit, they have five major segments. They sell to the analgesic market with Bayer Aspirin, Aleve, Actrin, and Midol. They sell to the gastrointestinal segment with Alka-Seltzer, Lefax, Philips, Milk, Magnesium, Rennie, and Telcid. They do dermatological work with cough and cold remedies with Alka-Seltzer Plus and Aleve Cold and Sinus. And they sell in the multivitamin and dietary supplement area, including how many of you guys grew up with Flintstones One a Day? So that would be them. But it's a different segment than, say, cough and cold or dermatological. So in this particular division, they have five major segments that we're familiar with. And within Aspirin alone, remember I said subsegments, they have two subsegments, Aspirin regimen and Aspirin for pain relief. Well, we all know what Aspirin for pain relief is. Anybody know what Aspirin regimen would be, what that refers to? You're all too young to need it. So if you've had a heart attack, they want you to take low-dose aspirin all the time because it keeps your blood thin, keeps your blood from clotting, and so we have that as well. In some sense, they eventually overemphasized the fact that their problem could be the product could be used as a cure for that, and I think I'm going to return to that. Yeah, here, where a guy is on an airplane and he's asking the flight attendant if they have any aspirin, and they think he's having a heart attack. He says, "No, it's just a backache." They may have overemphasized.
I had a heart problem. I was told to begin my aspirin regimen. I just didn't listen until I almost lost my life. My doctors, again, ordered me to take aspirin, and I do.
Be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen.
Listen to the doctor. Take it seriously.
So this is them building up that image of the product to be used for Heart Advantage. So even here we've got the low-dose chewable and whatever that is, cherry and orange, and we've got the women's low dose with calcium and the sugar-free version and the safety-coated version, all of these as aspirin regimen. Here we have aspirin for pain relief. Well, duh, but back in body, extra strength, PM plus.
Body pain? Oh. Back pain? Try Bayer Back in Body. It's Bayer aspirin plus a special pain relief booster to relieve sore backs and soothe aching muscles fast. Get moving again with Bayer Back and Body.
So they obviously advertise that, and I think here's my example where they may have overemphasized the aspirin regimen product.
Do you have something for pain?
I have Bayer aspirin.
I'm not having a heart attack. It's my back.
I mean Bayer Back and Body. It works great for pain.
Bayer Back and Body provides effective relief for your tough pain.
Better?
Yeah. Thanks for the tip.
So we're clarifying any confusion. We do both. We do the regimen, but we also do pain. We're an aspirin product. So they are obviously segmented in a variety of different ways. So let's think about some guidelines for selecting a target market. So we've gone, again, keep in mind what we're doing here. We've gone out and segmented the market. We found a bunch of different people, a bunch of different pain points, different needs, wants, and desires that we might be able to satisfy, maybe. So before selecting a target market strategy among those various segments out there, you have to determine the desirability of each segment. For example, is that segment's needs compatible with our goals? We found a segment that wants to buy beer to drink over lunch while they're off their manufacturing job. Is that really what we want to be known for doing? Maybe it's not. Do we want to avoid selling to discounters like Walmart? Okay, well, then we're going to reach a different group of people in a different way through a different channel of distribution, but maybe that's not compatible with our image, with what we want to do. So, how desirability is a segment? Of course, is there a match between that market opportunity and our resources? Hey, yeah, we're doing paintball, but let's go enter the basketball, volleyball market against Rollins and against Wilson. No, that's not part of our mission, thank you. It's not going to work. So not a good match between that opportunity and what resources we have. Black & Decker had an interesting situation. They bought GE's small appliance business. So Black & Decker at one time was known for tools. And then they bought the small appliance business. And the question was for them, how and where to market this new to us segment? Should we market it under the GE name, keep it that way? Should we market it under the Black & Decker name? What they decided was to go with a marketing approach where they already were. So their tools were well known at the Home Depot and Lowe's sort of thing, because they were selling tools. And they said, hey, let's ramp up and start selling through that channel of distribution to this market. Also, as you decide on a segmentation approach and a targeting approach, make sure that you have the profit available that justifies that investment. $100 million for each new type of toothpaste, better bring in some bucks. So the segment has to be large enough in terms of people and money. Should be something that's expected to grow. Let's not invest in a whole bunch of stuff in an area that's dying. We need to be able to reach that segment that we're about to choose at a reasonable cost, physically, with our message as well. And sometimes we have an interesting idea that just isn't going to pan out given what it's going to cost to make it work. I'm going to spin you back in time to the days of the early internet bubble before the bubble burst. There were all kinds of interesting concepts out there. One was, at the time, WebVan. WebVan was an online credit and delivery grocery business. It went bankrupt. It operated in 10 U.S. markets. It delivered its products to customers' homes within a 30-minute window of their choosing. And they had originally hoped to expand to 26 cities. But they were not associated with Kroger, Walmart groceries, Acme. They were going to have to stock up all the products they sold in warehouses that would allow them in each of these cities to deliver within 30 minutes. How many grocery items do you need to make this work? It's not 10 or 20, it's hundreds or thousands to make it viable. CNET killed WebVan is one of the greatest dot-com disasters in the history. What happened? The cost of processing, fulfilling, and delivering was $500 million per market. You aren't going to sell that much groceries. And so, realistically, they couldn't reach their target consumers with the process. So they couldn't build enough warehouses in enough places at a reasonable cost. Now, has the idea since they crashed come back? Yeah, but it's come back mostly with major grocery stores themselves offering this thing because they have the warehouses around. So updating the concept, DoorDash expanded so customers can now order groceries on demand from their local southeastern grocery stores, delivered in as little as 45 minutes through DoorDash's marketplace app and website. Uber Connect is now available in 6,000 cities and towns in the US, and their host of instant delivery startups, Joker, Bike, 1520, Fridge, No More, Gorillas, Getter, they promise extra fast convenience store style products directly to city dwellers' doors. The companies even say they'll arrive in 30, 20, 15, or 10 minutes after the customers hit the buy button, but they aren't ramping all this up from their own warehouses. They're making use of existing things. Also, let's pick a target market where the competitors are either very few, there's lots of opportunity, as we were talking about in the Mediterranean food, casual food industry. There's not a lot of competition out there, so it's or weak competitors. So having segmented the market into those various groups and analyzed them to determine which and how many of those to target with appropriate marketing mixes, we're now going to think about how to position our brand for the target audiences. STP, segmentation, targeting, positioning. So positioning is creating and maintaining in the minds of our target market consumers a particular image for our brand relative to the competing products that are out there. When you think Sensodyne, how many people know Sensodyne toothpaste, the brand? What do you think of when you hear Sensodyne? What do you think of? It's sensitive gums. It's not that hard. You don't think sexy breath. Maybe you think white teeth, I don't know. But Sensodyne comes to mind, I think for almost everybody, as sensitive teeth, sensitive gums. Yes, ma'am. Right. They've done a pretty good job of positioning their brand in the mind of the consumer, right? The name implies the benefit that it provides, Sensodyne. Its ads certainly going to go beyond just suggesting the benefits, stating the benefits.
Having the sensitivity, they want to get rid of it. They want to be out of pain. There's no reason to put up with the pain of tooth sensitivity. I recommend Sensodyne to my patients. Sensodyne helps with the sensitivity, plus it's great for fighting cavities, it freshens your breath. With proper brushing, it can help with your gum health. Sensodyne is definitely at the top of my list. It works and it always delivers, and my outcomes are always good. What a difference that makes.
So obviously this ad emphasizes what it does, what it is. So in combination with the along with the dentist recommendation, it's not just an ordinary toothpaste. It's not just going to make your teeth whiter, right? Anybody use Sensodyne because they have sensitive teeth other than me? Yeah, and if they don't have that in the store, do you just buy any old brand or do you go find Sensodyne? Yeah, I'll use Colgate as the sensitive version of that. Yeah, because if you just use some other kind, man, that hurts. So consumers often form mental images of the brands, of the retail stores, of the products to help simplify their decision making. And as marketers, we want to help them to do that. Here's the thing, it's for you, Sensodyne. So what are the three steps in positioning the product? First of all, well, choose your positioning concept. And it should be the one that's important to the consumer, that deals with their pain points. In the case of Sensodyne, literal pain points, your sensitive gums, your sensitive teeth. So you want to answer the question, what will you do for me that other companies or products will not do, won't do as well? If soap leaves your skin feeling dry and tight, and you don't like that, could we come up with a product that might help out your skin be softer and moister? Well, Dove certainly did that. Dove contains 1/4 pure moisturizing cream and mild cleansers that leave skin clean and soft and smooth. Soap, on the other hand, contains drying ingredients that strip the skin of its natural moisture and leaving it feeling dry and tight. Is that, do you guys know Dove? Does that come to mind? 1/4 pure moisturizing cream, okay. Then, having decided what your message is, your concept is, design the features that convey that position. A quarter, whatever it was, cleansing cream, special Mediterranean food. Done well, this set of features is your unique selling proposition. That thing which you're going to do better than the competition to better satisfy that target market. Sensitive teeth, soft skin, good Mediterranean food, $3,000 jeans. Your unique selling proposition differentiates your product from the competitors on a feature that is key to those consumers. If I have sensitive teeth and you're selling the toothpaste that really freshens my breath but doesn't help my teeth, you're not helping me. It's not what I want. So you might have the lowest cost product out there. You might have the highest quality product out there. You might have the reputation for being the first ever of its kind, if your target market likes that idea. So USP can be thought of as what you have that competitors don't, that is of importance to your consumers. So what is it for your company? What is it that makes you special? Is it convenience? Is it low cost? Is it high quality? Is it status? Then coordinate all the elements of the marketing mix to convey that position. We're going to discover and satisfy consumer needs, wants, desires at a profit through an integrated effort of the firm. Make sure that all your messages are pushing Mediterranean, light Mediterranean food, sensitive teeth, expensive jeans. So target, this tagline might be expect more, pay less. That might be their position in the marketplace. The Peace Corps, their quote, the toughest job you'll ever love, makes them different than everybody else. M&M's, melts in your mouth, not in your hand. FedEx, the world on time and when it absolutely, positively has to get through overnight. Bounty, the quicker picker-upper. All of these catchphrases, all of these taglines are a shorthand for what they hope is the position they've created in your mind for this brand. And to the extent you go, yeah, it's working. To the extent you go, what? Never heard of that. Well, then it's not working very well. Or you're not in their target audience. Why am I putting Kay's Jewelers here? Because, okay, so I get what I'm doing. So when you think of Kay's Jewelers, do you know their tagline? What is it? Every kiss begins with K. K, I might not hit the note there. Every kiss begins with K's is something that comes to your mind and one of their positions, right? One of their positioning statements.
What's that? You got Mommy a Mother's Day present? From where?
Oh, nice. Oh, I totally agree. She's the best mommy ever.
It's beautiful. Dad, what's that? Give Daddy a great big kiss.
Every kiss begins with K.
Aw, so they could go with style or luxury or innovation or status. Not their particular pitch to their particular audience. A bit of reasonably priced love.
Of course, sometimes we have positioned a brand and then we need to reposition it as part of our marketing strategy. Certainly Victoria's Secret, you've heard of them, has had to do a little repositioning. So Victoria's Secret is the largest lingerie retailer in the U.S. and it has been for several decades. The total revenues in 2019 were $7.5 billion. So they're big players. Victoria's Secret is a fashion retailer known for its lingerie, sleepwear, and beauty products. It achieved explosive success in the late 1990s and the 2000s, but over time, it's been accused of losing relevance as societal norms and consumers' values have changed. We have to keep up with those norms. Remember the crest factors and how they influence our consumers. The brand faced criticism for its use of overly sexualized marketing, and for not representing a diverse range of body types in its fashion shows and advertising. In 2019, as the criticism grew, the company announced that it would no longer be hosting its annual fashion show, which had been a major event for the brand. The decision was made in part due to declining ratings and negative backlash surrounding the show's lack of diversity. In 2020, its revenues were $5.4 billion, we would argue in part due to the changing social norms. In recent years, the brand has attempted to reposition itself and focus on a more inclusive and diverse image. In 2021, the revenues were $6.8 billion. We would argue the positive impact of repositioning the brand in the face of changing consumer values. In 2020, the brand also announced that it would be discontinuing its swim and apparel lines and focusing on lingerie, sleepwear, and beauty products. Victoria's Secret has also made efforts to be more inclusive in its advertising and marketing campaigns. The brand has featured models of different sizes, skin tones, ethnicities in its campaigns, and has also made an effort to feature more realistic and diverse images of women in its advertising, changing that brand image, repositioning the brand. In general, brands need to understand and represent the diversity of their customers and to adapt their marketing as changes occur in their target audience. Today's consumers want to see themselves reflected in the marketing of companies whose clothing they wear. When you don't provide your customers with satisfaction and value, well, dropping the ball really gave other brands the opportunity to move in to this market, says Gabrielle Santiello, founder of retail consultancy A-Line Partners. Their biggest competitor is Aerie at American Eagle, and they're the ones who really pioneered the body positive movement. Direct-to-consumer, DTC, lingerie brand Third Love, in particular, has based much of its marketing on being the anti-Victoria's Secret. With its repositioning, Victoria's Secret plans to regain lost market share and is aiming for $7.4 billion in sales. So we segment the marketplace, we target our selected markets, we position our brand relative to those target markets as we perceive them and they perceive us at a point in time. When their attitudes, values, and norms shift, if we want to stay relevant, not let the competition in, satisfy our consumers, we had best reposition the brand to those new situations. Okay, now we're going to move back to some pre-recorded material once again, covering perceptual mapping.
So if you are thinking about segmentation, you have to think about where you're going to fit your image in the minds of the consumer against competition. So what you would need to do is find out what are the important attributes that consumers look for in your brand, okay? So in this case, research has shown that for these fashion houses, for these clothing stores, the two relevant dimensions are fashion forward versus traditional, and limited service versus extensive service, all right? So those are the two dimensions that consumers seem to feel are important. Then what they do is position the competition on the map. Where would you not especially think there's a good opportunity for a new brand to come in? What area? So what? The area with a whole bunch of people. So I think it's probably a bad idea to say my new brand ought to go up where Neiman Marcus, Saks Fifth Avenue, Bloomingburgs, and Nordstrom's are, right? That seems like an odd choice to make. But there are other areas out there where you might begin to look. There are a couple unoccupied positions, which may or may not be practical, but it's worth looking at, yeah? And so you might say, with your target audience in mind, you want to select a positioning concept that's valuable to them, that differentiates you from the competition. So could you be, are there consumers who want fashion forward with less service or somewhat traditional with moderate service? Those are unoccupied spaces according to our analysis. Is this a market where you could work? Then design the dimensions or the features that most effectively convey this position to your target audience, whichever one you chose. So communicate that out with your brand name or with the store features or with the website, whatever would be that makes sense to you to get this idea out. And then coordinate your marketing mix components to convey a consistent position. All of the marketing elements should complement this intended position, segmentation, targeting, positioning, building this image of the mind of the consumer, whatever it is. So often a perceptual map will help us to think about this positioning approach. And of course, that assumes that you met the segmentation criteria that we talked about a lecture or two ago. So what are some mistakes you can make in doing your positioning? Well, one issue is not doing a very good job of building that image in the mind of the consumer, under-positioning, failing to position the brand very well. What was this idea of Crystal Pepsi, a clear soda product that tastes like Pepsi? What is it supposed to be? It's supposed to be like an un-cola, like ginger. What is it supposed to be? They didn't make it sell. Didn't make any sense. Although KFC has swapped back and forth, they wanted to be known as KFC for a while, but of course, what did that stand for initially? Kentucky Fried Chicken. Pretty clear positioning there, what you are, yeah? Now we're KFC, and we lost for a while the Colonel. What are you again? You used to be fried chicken, now you're KFC with no Colonel. More recently, of course, they brought the Colonel back in a variety of different incarnations to try to reposition what the brand is in the minds of the consumer. Say, so, well, yeah, KFC, good chicken. Or you can over-position, creating too narrow a picture in the minds of the consumer. How many of you guys either like getting, like buying, like giving, like receiving jewelry? Is that a thing people still like these days? One person, two people, three people. So I don't know what people do this day. Webbies, you like to get jewelry? If you like to give or get jewelry, how often does it occur to you think of Tiffany's? You think about Tiffany's because you'd like to get it or because you want to buy it? Or just because you think of Tiffany's? Tiffany's might cost like too much, which is the image they build, right? The image that they have in the mind of the consumer. But in fact, of course, depending how much money you have to spend or how much you want to spend, there are some things that don't cost thousands of dollars that you might be able to consider. Show me some prices here, my friends. I don't know, let's go here. We have some prices. So here is the New York Tiffany's at $250. I mean, it's not nothing, but it's also not a several thousand dollar purchase. What's this one at? A little more expensive, $400. What did I actually want to find? Jewelry in general? I guess that's where we are. They've changed their work. There's what we usually think of as Tiffany's, yeah. $11,000, $9,000, but hey, a couple hundred for a special occasion might be, no thanks, might be something that we might think about being able to do. So they, in fact, limit themselves by positioning themselves as being so very expensive, when in fact we can get things for a little less expensive, a couple hundred bucks if we want. So maybe it's over-positioning or confused positioning. This is when we claim two or more contradictory benefits, or we keep changing our positions. And again, it leaves buyers with a confused image of a product. How many people know the brand Velveeta? And what is it? It's a, is it what? Cookies? No. It's what? It's a cheese. But for a long time, people couldn't quite figure out, what do I use this cheese? Is it supposed to be snacking? Is it supposed to be cooking? How should I use Velveeta against other choices I have out there? And so in order to clear things up, a while ago, they came up with some special uses for Velveeta in holiday cooking to help people picture what the thing might be in their mind. Yeah, people are confused about what it is. So what are some basic positioning platforms you might choose for your brand, given your target audience and what you're all about? You could go with the idea of a premium positioning or a status symbol positioning. So when we think expensive cars, expensive sports cars maybe, we might think about Maserati. We aren't really thinking about an inexpensive brand when we think Maserati, yeah? Do you guys know Stuart Hughes as a designer? Do we know Stuart Hughes? So Stuart Hughes specializes in ridiculously expensive toys for the very rich. So here is a diamond BlackBerry. Why anybody wants a BlackBerry these days for 15,000 pounds. Here's a Nokia Crown for 15,000 pounds. Here's a cheap 24-gal golden platinum iPhone 11 Pro Edition for 7,000 pounds. If you're into gaming, how about a nice Nintendo Wii Supreme for only 300,000 pounds? Obvious. Yes, ma'am. I don't know what it is in American dollars right now. They're about, actually, unusually, they're about the same. So it's about 300 American dollars, yeah. And usually when the exchange rate is worse for the dollars, that would be $400,000. So people actually do buy that product. Not you and I, but it's a particular niche, a particular segment, a particular positioning as premium or status symbol. On the flip side, if you aren't buying a Maserati, maybe you're going to position your brand as a good value for the money. Here's the best subcompact cars for 2022 and 2023. Nothing will be near the cost of a Maserati. So here we're in the $17,000 range, $23,000, et cetera. So there's a different way to think about positioning your brand. How about friendly family values, warmth? Bash's grocery store, your hometown grocery store, a family-owned and operated grocery that began back in 1932. We've changed over the years, and including development, but we strive to grow and improve our business with a continued focus on the needs of our customers. We maintain commitment to the betterment of our community through service and support, etc. And so that might be your approach. IBM for a long time was hardware by our equipment. They've switched their attitude and their marketing to a softer side, to providing business solutions. See how CEOs are embracing sustainability to a better environment in the bottom line, and think about how IBM can help solve that problem. What do you think, Disney? Among other things, what might you think of? Fun, as well as a little expensive. And so Disney's out there with that positioning. Trendy and stylish, Oscar De La Renta and Zara. Or role model, user image, reliability, trust, quality, premium, celebrity endorsements, anti-establishment or rebel, a technology leader and innovator, service leader. And of course, you can combine various positioning strategies together. So when you think Disney, although I put it out under fun, you probably would also think family. So how about family fun? So you can start making more complex positioning decisions for your target audience and what they value and what differentiates you from the competition. So lots of different ways to do that. So STP, segmentation, dividing up the mass market into groups that have different needs and wants and desires from one another. Targeting, selecting one or more of those to focus your marketing efforts on. Positioning, building that brand image in the mind of the consumer that differentiates you from the competition and causes them to want you over somebody else. STP, yeah? All right, with this in mind, we talk about the marketing mix and building products and services that are going to appeal to that segment of the population. So let's think a little bit about one of the P's of the marketing mix, the first one we're going to talk about, which is the idea of developing new products and services. Lecture notes, page 138, chapter 10 in the textbook. And the first of the four P's we're going to think about. Remember, we started the course at the 30,000-foot level above what you do every day. We drifted down a little bit. Now we're getting towards the 10,000-foot level, again, over your everyday job. We're developing the four P's of the marketing mix against all this background we've talked about previously, starting with the idea of products or services, and viewed a different way. Here we show it as the circle, product, place, price, promotion, the four P's of the marketing mix, an integrated plan of action with the consumer at the center, B2B or B2C, and we start with product, broadly speaking, including services marketing. So one question is, why do we start with the idea of new products? Who needs them?
So I go back a little bit into ancient history to make this point about who needs them. It can be hard to see the future acceptance of new products and growth for innovations. In 1942, when computers were in their infancy, Tom Watson, who was the chairman of IBM, said, I think there is a world market for maybe five computers. Now, admittedly, in those days, computers were mammothly large, needed to be cooled, didn't do a lot, frankly, but still, it's hard to see what that future will look like for new car products. And talking about television, in the early 1950s, Nero Avzanik, the president of the movie company, 20th Century Fox, said, video, meaning those television boxes, video won't be around more than 6 months. People will get tired of staring at a plywood box. Well, television's been around for quite a bit, as you know. For years, management at 3M companies did not see any commercial value in the non-sticky adhesive product that eventually became Post-it notes. They just didn't see there was a value for it. It took them a long time to understand how that might be useful in the marketplace. But, of course, new product ideas can mean huge success for companies. Netflix started its life in 1997 mailing DVDs to customers. I don't know if any of you ever saw these red envelopes with DVDs in them. In 2007, executives decided to focus on streaming content that could be accessed instantaneously via the internet and to move away from physical media. Netflix's decision to invest in this new idea of streaming changed the entire entertainment landscape, and today the company is worth more than $200 billion. Recent years haven't been kind to Harley-Davidson. Its sales have sagged as its core customers have aged. Attempts to draw in new customers, younger customers, with new products and new promotional campaigns haven't been very successful. But the 2021 release of a high-tech, high-performance adventure touring motorcycle named the Pan American has been a success. The Pan American 1250 raced straight to the top of the adventure bike sales charts in the U.S., and now Harley-Davidson is on course to exploit the adventure motorcycle market, ADV, with a new, smaller, more accessible Pan American 975. So the point here, new products do matter. So it can mean huge success.
So we would say that great ideas are the cornerstone of business success. For example, PricewaterhouseCoopers says 50% or more of plausible business ideas for new products come from customers, competitors, and suppliers. Well, that seems like everybody. Where's the other 50% come from, according to their research? The company's employees. But the challenge is always, how do you get your customer employees to respond? You have a little suggestion box where people write stuff down and stuff it? I mean, how's that work? So today, of course, the challenge is, how do we stimulate employees to make suggestions, and how can we sort through the various suggestions to find promising ideas, given who we are, what's practical, etc.?
Well, of course, today there's a software solution to help with that. PlanBox. To create a culture of innovation, organizations need to create collaborative work environments. With PlanBox Open Innovation Platform, you can harness your organization's full innovation potential by developing a systematic and sustainable approach to crowdsourcing new ideas, innovations. You can bridge the gap between internal resources and external networks of talent, expertise, and infrastructure. Now, IT has a key role to play here. A new generation of enterprise resource planning, ERP, IT folks out there, systems, for example, takes advantage of cloud computing, mobile computing, social business tools, and big analytics to help us generate these, among other things, new product ideas. Speaking of which,
how many of you got any Lego fans here? Anybody still like Legos? One, two, oh, we've got some Lego fans over there. So they actually have a way to crowdsource new products. So let's take a look at how Legos handles new ideas.
Have you ever had an idea for a new Lego set? On Lego Ideas, you can check out proposals for new Lego sets created by fans just like you. Find your favorite projects, vote, give feedback, and even submit your own. If a project gets 10,000 votes, it enters the Lego review phase. Then, our review board evaluates and selects which project will become the next LEGO Ideas product. Members whose projects are selected are recognized for inspiring a LEGO Ideas set. and even receive a percentage of the product's sales. Once the design process is complete, the next LEGO Ideas product is produced in our factory and shipped to stores. Finally, the LEGO Ideas product is available to buy. And you made it happen on LEGO Ideas. So what are you waiting for? Check out cool projects on the Discover page, or learn how to submit your own by clicking How It Works. The next set we approve might even be yours.
What a cool, crazy way to get your fan base involved and crowdsource ideas for new products, including the possibility that you earn money from your new product idea on their website. I assume this is still active for us. So here I'm at ideaslego.com/all, and here are some new ideas coming out. Here's how to submit an idea. Yes, yes. Here's a new idea called Bambi. Here's a motorized lighthouse. And here's some scary builds where you can enter your activities for a scary Legos build for Halloween, I presume. So if you're really a fan, here's your opportunity to get a new product out there and, hey, maybe pick up some bucks along the way. So that's an interesting way to think about new products. So returning to basics, just to make sure we're all on the same page. What is a product that we're creating a new one of? Well, a product is a set of tangible and intangible attributes. I threw out these words and it's not always clear. People know what I mean. So what's a tangible attribute of a product? Tangible attribute. Something that you can taste, touch, feel, whatever's left here, smell, is a tangible attribute of the product. So what would an intangible attribute of a product be? Well, yes, something you can't do that, but give me an example. Yeah? Like an idea, the thing is fun. Can't touch fun, but a product might claim to be fun, right? So what are the intangible things that make up your product? Something emotional. When we say product, we mean it generally. It can be a good. It can be a service. It can be a place. It can be a person. It can be an idea. And if you remember back to the first or second class that we talked about, we actually gave examples of all those things being marketed. Maybelline, mascara, online video things, the Texas example for place. Person, of course, were political candidates. And the ideas were don't drive and text because you're going to get yourself into trouble. So these things, the sort of tangible and intangible attributes, provide satisfaction of a consumer's need, want, or desire, and they do that in the form of benefits. So what are we trying to do? Let's backtrack to the basics. Discover and satisfy consumers' needs, wants, and desires at a profit or great effort of the firm, providing value to them. So we need to provide satisfaction of the needs, wants, and desires in the form of benefits using our product, whether it's a good service, place, person, or idea. And of course, since profit is part of the story, this thing's exchanged for money, in most cases, or some other unit of value, your time, if it is perhaps a charitable organization. And the total product is a bundle of those tangible and intangible benefits that you put together to provide benefit for the consumer. At the core, we have the basic benefits of the product. They're the fundamental needs that the customer satisfies when they buy the product. Why do you buy toothpaste? At the core. Let's see if anybody else, somebody else participating. Why do you buy toothpaste? If you aren't sure, then maybe we shouldn't have you buy toothpaste. Why? To clean your teeth, yeah? Could you imagine buying a toothpaste that didn't clean your teeth? It wouldn't really be a toothpaste. So at its core is the basic thing the thing does. Toothpaste cleans teeth. Yay! It also is not very differentiating, though. But your core product has to provide that basic need that we're talking about. So at its core, a product like toothpaste certainly has to clean teeth. There are other core things we want it to do. So we want it to maybe prevent tooth decay, pretty core. cleans your teeth but doesn't help you with tooth decay. Whitens your teeth, a pretty core idea. Okay, so these might be some of the basic features or benefits that are core to the product without which you can't very well compete in that field. So products are rarely marketed using the core product because everybody has to have the core product to be in the business. Offers no competitive advantage. Everybody has to do that thing. Would you buy a toothpaste that didn't provide white teeth, prevent tooth decay, or provide brighter teeth? I don't think so, right? So you have to understand the core, so you're providing the basics. But then you're going to get to the actual product, including the physical good itself, the brand name, and all those other things that make you special. So are you perceived as a premium brand? Are you perceived as a budget brand?
And so why don't we just end the lecture 15 here for today? Again, I apologize for having to do it in this format. I hope it wasn't too disruptive moving between the pre-recorded lecture and what I had to interject from this semester's material. So lecture 15 will end on, it has ended on page 141 of the lecture notes, and on page 266 of the textbook. And on Thursday, I guess in a similar format, unless I'm suddenly all set with COVID, I'll continue the march in a similar fashion. If you had any issues, questions, or problems, certainly let me know. As usual, lmarks@kent.edu. If not, have a great day. Next time.